like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Cy Montgomery, the author of numerous books about animals. One of her best known is The Good Good Pig, The Extraordinary Life of Christopher Hogwood, which chronicled life with her pet pig. Just last week, Montgomery published her latest book, a departure from the others in that it's an autobiography, though, with a suitably Cy twist, How to Be a Good Creature, a memoir in 13 animals. As the title suggests, the new book tells her life story by way of recounting the animals that were important to her along the way, both personally and professionally. The arc of her saga includes animals you might expect, like dogs and her beloved pig, Chris, but also widens out to reflect some of the animals Montgomery has studied and written about through globetrotting expeditions. This includes emus in the Australian outback, an Amazonian tarantula, tree kangaroos, an octopus she forged a friendship with, and more. In the book, she also frankly addresses her struggles with depression, including a period she was haunted by suicidal thoughts. We'll delve into the new book and at least some of the animals featured in it when I speak with Cy Montgomery in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in the show, I'll speak with Dina Athanasi, Outreach and Events Manager at Animal Coalition of Tampa, about its 18th annual Stride for Strays, happening this Sunday, October 7th at Al Lopez Park. Meanwhile, the WMNF Fall Fund Drive starts tomorrow. Talking Animals will be up to bat 1 week from today, raising money for WMNF. And once again, I have a towering goal. I've been asked to raise $3,100 for an hour-long show. That's bonkers. The only prospect I have of reaching that goal is by receiving pledges before that fund drive show. If you're a fan of the show, if you appreciate the work we do each Wednesday morning, please help me get a head start on that fundraising goal by dropping a few bucks in the Talking Animals tip jar. I put the link to the tip jar in the comments of multiple Facebook pages this morning, including Talking Animals radio show page and my personal Facebook page. And as always, I'll have some very cool thank you gifts that you can only get by pledging in support of Talking Animals, including a pair of awesome tickets to Elton John's farewell concert at Amalie Arena on November 28th, the show that appears to already be sold out or darn close, given that ticket resellers and brokers are already handling ticket sales at inflated prices. Instead, why not pay less inflated prices for great seats and support WMNF in the process? Other exclusive thank you gifts for pledges to Talking Animals include DVD copies of the tremendous documentary Blackfish, signed books by past guests on the show, and more. Please visit TalkingAnimals.net to see our thank you gifts, simple and fast ways you can pledge in support of Talking Animals and WMNF. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. Right now, though, let's get to Cy with the reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Cy Montgomery back on Talking Animals. Good morning, Cy.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals again.
Oh, I'm delighted to be back onto this great show.
Oh, great. Well, I really enjoyed the book, and it's a wonderful conceit to write a memoir by way of telling stories about animals you've studied and in some cases loved. How did you arrive at this idea for approaching a memoir?
Well, a few years ago, a dear friend of mine, Vicki Croak, whose work you may know, she wrote several best-selling books, the latest of which is called Elephant Company.
Yeah.
She had a show and came out to the house in Hancock to interview me about my travels around the world and the animals I'd met. And at the very tail end of the interview, she said, "Well, you've told us a lot of natural history about animals and adventures with animals. Let me ask you, what have you learned from these animals about your life, about how to live your life?" And my answer was, "How to be a good creature."
Mm-hmm.
Well, an editor saw that interview, which is archived online. You guys can see it online. And said, "Cy, that's your next book. You have to write this book." And I didn't want to, Duncan.
Why not?
I didn't want to write another memoir. I'd rather write just about the animals. I don't want to write about my childhood. I don't want to write about some of the dark things in my life. I'd rather not revisit it. It's scary. It's an intimate thing to share these things with thousands of people many of whom you have never met.
Yeah.
And so I really hesitated to do it. But there were two things that made me decide to go for it. And one was I wanted to thank those individual animals. It's true that they can't read. They don't care. Many of them are dead. But I still felt I had to thank them. And the other thing was that my readers that I hadn't met, I may never meet, readers that hadn't read my other work, I still, though, have affection for these people. And I know that they also face many of the things that I have faced, from how to build a family, which may not include being married, may not include having children, may not even include having pets. They face the same things I do, finding your destiny and then finding a way to pursue and not fail that destiny, facing loss, finding ways to fall in love with the world again and again. And these are the things that these 13 individual animals that I write about in this memoir helped me to do. And I felt that for my readers, I should open up my life to some of its intimate memories to help them through the same things I'd gone through.
Well, that makes sense. I guess at the same time, when reading the new book, I couldn't help thinking that, at least compared to most people who write about animals, which you've done obviously prolifically, both for us grown-up types and for children as well, your books often tend to carry elements of memoir, whether it's recounting your life and experiences with what became a big friendly pig, or relaying the trials and tribulations of forging a friendship with an octopus who lived in the New England Aquarium. So in other words, I guess to me, these books often have involved personal stories told in the first person, but I guess what you're saying is this was going to go deeper and wider than some of the more personal accounts that might be included in those other books.
Yeah, and you know, Good Pig, that was a memoir.
Yeah.
But the other 26 books I've written have not been. And Good Pig was hard to write, too. Though, you know, because in Good Pig, that's a book about family. And there's a chapter about Christopher in this book, How to Be a Good Creature, too.
Yeah.
But I certainly did not talk about my childhood and in Good Pig. And there were some kind of scary, upsetting things in my childhood. But I gotta say, I wouldn't change a thing, because I'm living the most fun life right now. And I'm really, even though I have suffered from depression, and I did at one point think, you know, I can't stand this anymore. I've got to find a way out of this. Most of the time, I am living in a state of elation. I am singing in the car, and my dog is howling along with me, and I'm just dazzled by all the glory in the world.
Well, that's the thing. I think people who read some, the Herculean effort of reading all of your books, whatever, would think that exact thing, that she's got a great life, she has a real sort of joy in everything she does, and obviously a tremendous love and passion for animals. So I think some, as I was, I guess, would find it a little surprising to discover, although many of us have those kinds of struggles, that you had indeed had some bouts of depression and really got to a pretty dark place for a while. So
even people close to me, very close to me, did not know about that. But it was horrible. What happened? My pig Christopher Hogwood died in his sleep at age 14 of old age, and just a few short months after that, our border collie at age 16 had to be put down. Again, 16 is a wonderful old life for a dog. But wow, it hit me so bad. My hair fell out. You know, my gums bled. This was like physical. It was like my cells just did not want to divide anymore. It swept through my body like a tide. And my brain, I had some kind of brain damage from this. I would search for a word, and instead of coming up with what I wanted, I would say the antonym. It was horrible. And it wouldn't go away. It wasn't, did not last days or weeks. It went on from a month after month after month, and I thought, I can't live like this. But I had two things I had promised to do. One was to write Good Good Pig, which was, at the time I wrote it, not cathartic, not joyous. It was hard. It was just wrenching to write that book.
Yeah.
To write a goodbye to everything I loved. And yet I'm so glad I wrote it. And now I can read it and feel happy. And I know that other people do too.
Yeah.
The other thing that I had committed to do, and I always do what I say I'm going to do when I said I'm going to do it, I had committed to write a book about my dear friend, Dr. Lisa Daybeck, who studies tree kangaroos who live in the cloud forest of Papua New Guinea. And I knew that I had to do these two things. But when I had discharged those two duties, I promised myself, if I still feel this depressed, if I still can't look forward to tomorrow or next week or Easter or Christmas or next year or ever, if I still feel this terrible, I had some injectable Valium, which, by the way, does not work to kill you, but I believed it did. And that's how I was going to just end this. And I was so insane with the depression that it didn't occur to me that this would particularly upset anyone, such as my friends or my husband.
Yeah.
It's a kind of insanity. And that was my plan. And so I was in Papua New Guinea, feeling extremely depressed, very taxed by the strenuous hike at 10,000 feet. At one point, very early in the trek, I got both hypothermia and altitude sickness, and by mistake just wandered off into the woods, which it's all woods up there. I mean, I so could have died, but my photographer friend, Nick Bishop, found me and stuffed me in the tent and got me something warm to drink. But it was there due to two tree kangaroos who the researcher, Dr. Lisa Daybeck, named after Christopher and Tess, that I fell back in love with the world again. And I was just miraculously cured.
Well, I guess it's no surprise to anyone with even passing familiarity with you that the remedy chiefly involved animals. Of course, this was a pretty taxing expedition that you were in the midst of. But once again, for you, animals really saved the day and clearly saved you.
And that's the message, really, isn't it? There's a saying that I share in the book, and I think I've shared this before with you, Duncan. It's a well-known saying. And in fact, my friends in AA tell me it's used in AA. It goes, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And for me, the teacher has often had four legs or six legs or eight legs or none. Frequently, the teacher is an animal. And these animals, they're around not just for me, but for all of us. The problem is we often don't recognize the teacher. They appear. They're there for us. But the wisdom is being able to recognize that these are teachers and to be able to listen for the truths they have to show us.
Yeah.
I want to assure people that they're there for all of us.
And some people probably more than others. Again, in your case, those teachers are almost inevitably going to be animals. But others, for others, they may be too. And for others, they may be human types. And so, but yeah,
right.
I think
they could be someone that you wouldn't necessarily think of as a teacher. It could be a child. It could be some homeless person. It could be some porter that you meet in Asia or Africa or South America. It could be a shaman. It could be a person next to you in the subway. It could be someone who looks ordinary, but those teachers are there for us.
Right. The key thing, as you say, is to be open and aware enough to recognize, especially if they don't necessarily come across with a big neon sign saying, I am your teacher,
right.
That you still seize that opportunity. So let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Cy Montgomery, author of numerous books, including bestsellers The Good Good Pig and The Soul of an Octopus and numerous others. Her brand new book is How to Be a Good Creature, a Memoir in 13 Animals. If you'd like to ask Cy a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So with that in mind, let's get a caller invite. Holly, you're on Talking Animals with Cy Montgomery.
Yeah, it is an honor to hear you, and thanks, Duncan, for bringing Cy on again. Your books, anybody who hasn't read Cy Montgomery's books, they transcend regular writing about animals. Your book about the Amazon River dolphin is almost in the realm realm of magical realism, and it's a surreal, shamanistic, anthropological, ethnographic exploration of these magical dolphins. All of your books are incredible. And this latest topic you've got is what is the crux for me of why I'm an animal rights activist and a vegan and I listen to Duncan's show, etc., is that I look at humans and I know we are animals, but it seems to me that we're the only animals that would have needed a angry father god to kill his own son on our behalf. We're the only animals that live in all kinds of delusional situations. We're the only animals that don't make a positive net contribution to the ecosystems we enter. In fact, we kill them. So could you say or speak to the issue that animals are innocent and humans aren't?
Wow. Well, first of all, thank you so much for your affirming words. That makes me feel absolutely wonderful. And I'm so glad to speak to someone who's working so hard in your daily life, from your diet to your profession, to make things better for our world. And sometimes I look around at humans and just despair. Sometimes I get so angry. But, you know, it's the animals that have been able to show me the compassion for even our very irritating species. I have been shown by Christopher, for example, how much fun people can be. I mean, I'm married a human, and many of my friends are human. But it was Christopher Hogwood who showed me, for instance, how much fun children were. And we have to have compassion for our species because we are such a mess. And it kills me to see the enormous power that one species has at this moment over this planet, and that we're just such a blunderbuss. But part of it is just there's so many of us. There could be a few of us, and we could almost all be mean and nasty and slovenly, but the earth would just be able to forgive our garbage, you know? But there's just so many of us everywhere. So one of the things that we have to work on is the third rail no one wants to touch, and that is human overpopulation. It's not necessarily that we're all awful, but that there's just too many humans, and we have such a huge footprint, particularly here in the West. And another point I want to make, because you've given me this terrific opportunity, and that is I'm 60 years old. I was born in 1958, so I was not really old enough to participate in, like, the civil rights movement, for example. I was not part of the protests or that historic time. I wish I had been. But isn't it great that we get to use our lifetimes to do something so important now as to speak for the earth? And I am so honored to be on the same team as you are. The caller, Duncan, and so many others of your listeners and people that I meet, I'm so thrilled to be able to use my life, make a difference at a time when we need to save the planet because we're at such a turning point.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think as the caller noted, your books, and whether it's just individual books or just the collective body of work, which is substantial, really do make those points, send those messages in various ways that I think, because of the style of writing that you do, has, I think, a much better chance of being received and absorbed than other books that might be a little more confrontational or preachy. And I think people are just much more able to embrace the messages that you have about the animal world and therefore the world generally that we live in.
No, and, you know, writing is just one way that we can make a difference. Our caller is a vegan, and everything he eats every single day, many times a day, he's making a choice. That's one thing we can all do. There's so many things we can all do. I mean, whether we're vegan or vegetarian or whether we're carnivores, we can still make choices with everything we purchase, with how we vote, with what we wear, with our conversations with others, with letters to the editor. We just have so many opportunities to make a difference. And that's a kind of joyous thing, that we have power in even some of our smallest gestures.
Yeah. And again, I think one of the things that's clear about you and your work and the new book, How to Be a Good Creature, underscores is that even the earliest pages of this book, even if someone had never read a Cy Montgomery book, if they just picked up and began reading you with How to Be a Good Creature, A Memoir in 13 Animals, the very earliest pages of the new book telegraph that you were enthralled with animals from the get-go. And it's really interesting because, I mean, having done the show for a while and having spoken with tons of animal people, there's one broad way to categorize them is, on the one hand, there's people who grew up with animals, love them, and as adults wanted to help them, work with them, write about them, whatever. And on the other hand, there's folks who didn't grow up with animals. Critters weren't allowed in the house. They were sort of deprived by that. Their parents didn't want animals in the house, whatever. And now they're making up for lost time by hanging with or working with as many animals as they possibly can. And you obviously fall into the first group, but it seems like, again, your connection with animals wasn't just immediate, it was profound. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what Molly meant to you as a kid, because I think we really see from there, like, this arc that you do cover over the course of this cool and inventive memoir.
Well, Molly was our Scottish Terrier who came into our family. I was an only child when I was 3. And she did two important things for me. And the first was probably to save my life. As a child, like many children, I think children naturally do love animals. Whether parents cater to that love or thwart it, I think since we were, until very recently, hunter-gatherers, now we're shopper-gatherers, but we are built to pay attention to the natural world. Anyway, I thought for a long time as a small child that I was a horse. My parents' pediatrician told them that I would grow out of that phase, and I did. I soon realized instead that I was a dog. But something bad happened to me. I write about this very briefly. Something bad happened to me when I was about 2, and that's the time when children kind of are supposed to start to talk, and they're becoming more mobile, and they become... Apparently, I cried a lot, and my mother was often left alone with this howling infant, and my mother hated that, and she hated when I would cry during the cocktail hour. She still spoke of it even when I was an adult. It very much bothered her. And anyway, something bad happened to me when I was 2, and I probably was shaken or strangled because I didn't talk or move around for a pretty long time after that, and I failed to grow, and my parents were unhappy that this was happening because you don't want to have this embarrassing situation that your child isn't growing. So they tried everything and finally decided, well, we'll get a puppy, and that's when I got better. I don't remember anything, and it's consistent with brain injury. I don't remember anything of the day Molly came home. The greatest day of my life, short life, granted, at that point, but mm-hmm. I don't have any memory of it at all. But I can see in photographs how elated I was. And in most of the other photographs up to then, I look like a very frightened little kid. But when I'm with Molly, I am just radiating. So that's the one thing that Molly did for me, saved my life. And the other thing she did for me was she was my older sister. I mean, technically she was younger than me, but dogs mature faster than humans.
Sure.
And so she was fully adult when I was still a young child, and I recognized this, and I wanted to be like her. Most young girls want to be like their older sister, and she was my older sister, except she was a dog. So I wanted to be like a fully mature dog. I wanted to be able to run off into the wilds and, like her, understand the secrets of the wild animal.
So she was both, she was both transformative and a role model of sorts.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm speaking with Cy Montgomery, author of numerous books. Most recently, How to Be a Good Creature, a memoir on 13 animals. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's get another caller involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Cy Montgomery.
What's going on, guys? I want to start off by saying, number one, I love the show. I love the station, WMNF. It is such a refreshing, refreshing experience to be able to listen to a talk show that has such a variety of topics that doesn't always involve the war in the Middle East or terrorism or anything like that. Sometimes a personal story, such such as the one that we're listening to right now can be very motivating, and I thank you. I also wanted to say, please post the title of the book for those who are interested in purchasing it and reading it, like myself. The reason why I called in, I wanted to say, you know, in context to humans needing to save the planet. I disagree with that. It's actually humans needing to save ourselves. We have to remind ourselves that the Earth is over 4 billion years old. It doesn't need any saving from us. It survived asteroids. It survived, you know, solar impact. We will perish, and the Earth will heal itself. So we need to save ourselves, not necessarily the Earth. And with that, I will let you guys continue with the fantastic show. Thank you so much. And I'll be tuning in.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your comment and comments, really, I should say. And let me let you know, too, that there's all kinds of things already posted on Facebook. Cy Montgomery has her own Facebook pages. There's all kinds of stuff about the book. I've posted a number of things in the last few days about our interview coming up this morning. But again, the name of the book is How to Be a Good Creature, a Memoir in 13 Animals. And her website is cysymontgomery.com. So you can find out about not only the new book, but perhaps all the many books you haven't had the pleasure of reading before this one. So, again, thank you for your comments. So, Cy kind of touched on your situation with your mom, and it's clear from again, the way you write in this book that you and your mom have a strained relationship early on, and those fissures only seem to deepen over time. Do you want to describe anything more about that? Just because, again, I think there's some very situational things about how and when you grew up that I think launched you even more in the direction of being the great animal lover and writer about animals that you've become.
Well, you know, I think a lot of readers will relate to this, because how many of us have a family that totally understood them all the time? My father was an Army general, and my mother had grown up poor in Arkansas and yet had become a pilot. She went to college, became a valedictorian, went to Washington, D.C., landed a job working for the FBI, and then married a bird colonel who became a general, and next thing you knew, she was living all over the world. So she was used to kind of having her way and getting things to turn out the way she wanted, but I was the exception. I did not turn out the way she wanted. She loved her life and wanted me to have a life that was wonderful. However, we chose different things. And interestingly, well, I guess I should also mention that my parents, largely, I think, driven by my mom, disowned me for marrying my husband. They didn't like my choice, although it was the best choice I ever made. My husband, Howard Mansfield, and I celebrating our 31st wedding anniversary. We were together for 8 years before we got married. He's got a new book out at the same time I've got a new book out. It's just the greatest thing, being married to this person. They yeah. did not get that. But happily, I got to be with both of my parents when they died. They knew that I loved them in spite of everything. And I knew that in their own way, they loved me too. But once again, it was animals that helped me feel like I had a real family when my blood family disowned me.
Yeah.
It was Christopher Hogwood who taught me how to make a family out of love instead of out of blood. And it was an ermine, you know, the white-coated winter coat of a weasel. They call that an ermine, although he turns back into a weasel when he grows his brown coat in the summer. It was an ermine who really showed me how much, after my mother died, how much I really had loved her all along. So animals at every turn helped me. And, you know, what happened to me with my folks, people have faced much, much worse. But I think folks will recognize in their own lives similarities to what happened to me. And what I just want to say, what I just want to reassure people left and right, is that even when it seems like all is lost, when your family has turned against you, when you're so depressed you can't foresee a future, there's a miracle out there waiting to happen. Just trust it. It's there.
And again, I think back about the book. I felt like part of the estrangement with your folks, well, maybe primarily, of course, about your choice of husband, but I guess I thought also that they didn't understand your professional path and didn't really support that either.
No, not really.
Yeah.
I think, you know, because my mother was so happy with her life, which she made for herself against all odds, that she thought I would like that life, that I should have that life, the life of a wife and mother married to a powerful and admired man, a life in which, enlisted men are there to drive you in a chauffeured staff car, and you have a yacht and a helicopter at your disposal, and you have a professional cook to carve the meat at your dinner parties. And, you know, all of that obviously delighted her. She lived all over the world. And this from a person who grew up poor. And I chose a life in which, you know, I was hitchhiking around Rwanda and sleeping in huts made out of mud and loving it.
Yeah.
I was working in a pit with 18,000 snakes, researching my first children's book. I mean, that killed her. She thought, oh, great, a children's book. She's going to be writing about puppies and bunnies. And I'm like, well, no, actually, I'm going to be working with 18,000 snakes. Which she was terrified of snakes. So, you know, I made it a choice that perhaps it made her feel like I was rejecting everything that she had.
Yeah.
But I wasn't rejecting it for her. I was just wanting something else.
Right, you were just embracing your own path that meant something to you.
For her, she actually had a dog named Flip when she was a little girl who she loved very much. So she did understand what it was like to love an animal. But even my dad and the squirrels outside, my mother used to shoot squirrels and eat them. And my father would feed the squirrels by putting out peanuts and raisins as close to the window as possible so he could see them up close and know them personally. And my mother, you couldn't even say the word snake. When I told her, you know, she never had in the house my first children's book, and I had to call them the legless ones. I couldn't say the word snake. And so we disagreed on a lot of that. I was kind of like a different species for them.
That's really clear in the book. And I'm wondering, given all the animals you've written about and studied and traveled sometimes great distances to really get to know and examine, in that experience, are there some animals that you, looking back now, particularly think are likely to affect a human emotionally to be transformative?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, dogs, because so many of us have dogs and because dogs can unconditionally love you in a way that humans don't. Dogs invented their own species by choosing to live with us. And they are so attuned to us in a way that not even fellow humans are attuned to us. They can tell if you have cancer. They can tell if you're about to have an epileptic seizure when your own mother might not know, your own spouse might not know. They are so adept at observing us and reading our expressions and our body language and our scent and all that kind of stuff. So dogs and cats, too. I mean, cats are less overtly affectionate in general as a species, but these are animals that we interact with. I am hoping that dogs and cats can serve as bridge species to let us understand that the others, as Farley Mowat called all the animals, that the others all have something wonderful to offer us, and that the diversity of these animals, the ways in which they are not like us, are just as edifying and transformative and glorious as the ways in which they are like us. Like the octopuses who have been friends of mine, and I am not anthropomorphizing. I know that you understand that, Duncan, and your
right.
listeners do, but a lot of people are like, you're just projecting human emotions onto those animals. They're related to clams. They can't feel emotions. But we now know, through just studying neuroanatomy and neurotransmitters, that they do have emotions. They have all the same circuitry, all the same chemistry that drives our brains, our feelings, and our thoughts. They have that neural substrate. And in 2012, the top neuroanatomist and neuroscientist in the world signed the Cambridge Declaration on Consciousness, recognizing that certainly all mammals and birds and probably many invertebrate species, including octopuses, have consciousness.
Yeah.
So, and once you realize that there's a world of ours, the life in it is so conscious, it becomes just effervescent with lives and excitement and holiness, really.
Well, and again, as you're speaking about what people may or may not be surprised to know about an octopus, your book, The Soul of an Octopus, really addressed that in all kinds of ways, including the friendship and sort of friendships that you did forge with octopuses, even in captivity at the New England Aquarium. That went on to become kind of maybe a surprise bestseller, but a bestseller nonetheless. So it obviously really struck a chord with people, as many of your books do.
Boy, I'll tell you, it was a surprise. You're absolutely right. I was stunned. And the day that I got the call that it was a finalist for the National Book Award, my husband was as floored as if he'd been hit in the head with an asteroid. And I was in the car with Wilson Menashe, who is one of the volunteers, who's a major character in that book, who's an octopus whisperer, when this awful noise came out of my purse. And I am so non-technical. I have like a rock and a stick. I don't have a smartphone, but I did have a cell phone that I used only to make outgoing calls. And this awful noise coming out of my purse was the cell phone ringing, which it never does. And freakishly, someone had the number, and they were calling to tell me on my way to the aquarium this amazing news that it was a finalist for the National Book Award.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. But to me, that's the magic of the octopuses. And here's somebody that they're separated from us by half a billion years of evolution. The last time we shared a common ancestor with octopus, everybody was a tube. There were not even eyes yet. They did not exist on the Earth. And they, you know, they've got three hearts, and they've got, like, blue blood, and they can regrow their arms, and they taste with all their skin. And yet, someone like that can look up through the water and recognize your face and tell your face from all the other faces that pass by at a public aquarium. They know your face. And when they see you, they turn red with excitement and rush over to you from their lair to greet you literally with open arms. And that is friendship.
Well, again, I think that book really, like I say, it struck people. It inspired people. Even after I read it, a few months later, my family and I were on a trip to Boston. So I made a beeline to the aquarium thinking, I want to see an octopus. Probably won't have the kind of relationship, especially just in an afternoon, that Cy did. And wouldn't you know, they were, I think, revamping the whole octopus exhibit, so none of them were. But, I mean, it sent me there on a mission just because, again, the inspiration of your description of just those profound encounters with the octopus is just even there in the aquarium.
No. Duncan, next time you're in town, you better send me an email so that I can come and see you.
Okay.
And right now, they did revamp the octopus exhibit. They made it more than twice as large as it was before. It's enormous. It's terrific. The New England Aquarium is fabulous, and we have two octopuses there right now. They're separated by a piece of plexiglass so that they don't have that kind of dinner date you don't want to have.
Yeah.
It's a male and a female.
And
one of the greatest honors of my life was, before these two octopuses, there was one octopus, and her name was Cy.
Of course, as there should be.
And there's a picture of her in the new book.
Yeah, that's right. There are some wonderful pictures there, which we haven't even touched on. And we also, we're almost out of time here, but I should quickly, because I have been remiss here, by not mentioning Rebecca Green, whose wonderful illustrations run throughout the book. So there's got so many cool things beyond, obviously, your great writing, but there are wonderful photos about many of the animals that you describe. And again, these wonderful, wonderful sort of whimsical illustrations by Rebecca Green. So, Cy, we have just about reached the end of our time. We've been speaking with Cy Montgomery. Her brand new book is How to Be a Good Creature, a memoir in 13 animals. Again, her website is cymontgomery.com, and she's also on Facebook and probably other social media, etc. So, Cy, thanks so much for joining us again on Talking Animals. Good luck with the book. Obviously, I really loved it, and I think others, when they get a chance to read it, will feel much the same.
Thanks. so much, Duncan. And God bless you for what you do.
Oh, thanks. Okay, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Later on the show, I'll speak with Dina Athanasi of Animal Coalition of Tampa about their Stride for Strays fundraising extravaganza happening this Sunday, October 7th. Right now, though, it's time to step into the comedy corner. We're going to hear something from the wonderfully talented and amusing Harlan Williams, a truncated version of a piece called Animals and Corn. It's Harlan Williams in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Summer's finally ending. Thank God. No more cicadas. Have we had enough of the cicadas making noise in the trees all summer? What the hell is that noise? Somebody told me it's a mating call, man. Can you believe it? Can you imagine if that's how we picked up our spouses, huh? With that? You walk into a singles bar. Hey, baby, how's it going? God, there's too many animals anyways, isn't there? Do we need them all? Do we need birds, for Christ's sake, huh? Do we need birds flying all around, buddy? What do we need birds for, sir? Crows? Do we need crows? Dig this, I'm laying in bed the other night having a nice little sleep, right? Sunlight comes up in the morning. Sunbeam comes through my window, hits me in the face. My little eyes flutter open. I'm laying in bed and all I can hear out in the garden is the merry song of every bird in the bird kingdom. It's like... And then all of a sudden... What the f***? What the hell is he so pissed off at 6 in the morning? It's like going to a beautiful opera on a Saturday night. Ave Maria! Ah! We hate crows, don't we? We hate them so much we invented scarecrows. Scarecrows don't scare crows, they attract homeless people. Think about it. You're a homeless guy wandering down the road. There's some clothes in a field full of food. What could be better for your situation? Some Sears Tough Skins and some yummy corn to chew on.
That was Harlan Williams with part of a piece called Animals and Corn, taken from his album Harlarious. Now it's time to speak with Dean Athanasi of Animal Coalition of Tampa about this Sunday's Stride for Strays event. This is Dean Athanasi back on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Dina.
Good morning, Duncan.
So I always enjoy speaking with you, and this course also provides a chance for some folks who might be listening who may be unfamiliar with Animal Coalition of Tampa, just to give us a quick overview. So maybe you could just give a thumbnail sketch of what ACT is and does.
Sure. Animal Coalition of Tampa is a 501c3 nonprofit, low-cost, high-volume veterinary clinic. We do lots and lots of neuters to reduce overpopulation. We do microchipping and vaccines and other wellness care as well as dental. So if you have a dog or a cat, definitely check us out at actampa.org and you can see all of the information on there about what we do and when we do it. And it's just a great option for people who need low-cost medical care for their pets.
Yeah, it really, I think over the years, I've heard from so many people who have said, geez, thanks to ACT, because if I had to rely on a vet who I might love, but for some of these things, I just don't know that I could swing it. But as part of that, I mean, the way that you guys were able to provide low-cost spay, neuter, and other veterinary services you just outlined, Dina, is that you have a couple, at least, a big fundraising events every year, which brings us to Stride for Strays, the 18th annual, no less.
Yes.
So that's this Sunday. Give us the lowdown. What is Stride for Strays?
Stride for Strays is a fun day in the park that supports our mission. Come out with your dogs and have a great day. We have live music. We've got a classic rock band called the Doodads. They were out there last year. They're just great. And we'll have vendors and carnival games and all sorts of fun activities. And there is an optional dog walk that you can do, which is really more symbolic than it is anything else. It's not like a dog walk where you're trying to get a certain amount of miles in like a marathon. It's more just a symbolic walk with your dog to show that you support spay-neuter services and strays, which is, you know, that's why they call it Stride for Strays, because it is so much of what we do, particularly with the TNVR, with the cats and things. That's Animal Coalition of Tampa is very well known for helping the TNVR community with cats.
Sure. So trap, neuter, vaccinate, and return for people who are playing at home and don't recognize maybe the acronyms. So let's get to a couple of brass tacks about the day itself. So it's, again, it's this Sunday, and the park you referred to is Al Lopez Park.
Yes, and Al Lopez Park, 4810 North Hines Avenue.
Okay. And the time of the event is from?
9:30 till 2 in the afternoon.
Nice.
And people can register at strideforstrays.org. And yes, just going to be a great time out there, and hopefully the weather cooperates with us.
Right.
Not too hot, not raining.
Right. But either way, like you said, I mean, whether people want to do the walk or not, there's all these other kinds of cool things, music and vendors and eats and stuff. So, and there's a nice window of time. So no matter what you have going on that day, you can probably scoot over for at least a bit of it. So Dina, where beyond Stride for Strays, where they can register, is any other information online that people could maybe find out a bit more, especially if they're driving around and can't jot down some of these details?
Well, they can always go on our website, actampa.org. That's AC like Animal Coalition, the word Tampa.org, and there's a link on there to the event. And one more thing, there's a dog park at Al Lopez as well. So in addition to our event that we've got going on, if people want to go on over, you know, probably about 50 feet away from where all the festivities are, they could go to the dog park and let their dog off leash within the fenced area and have some fun too.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just a really fun day with your fur baby out there.
Cool. All right, Dean. Well, this sounds like another great blast on tap here. So thanks for filling us in, and we'll hope the weather gods do cooperate. And so otherwise, it sounds like it's just going to be another great event out there on Sunday. Thank you so much for joining us today, again, on Talking Animals.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. And there'll be a prize, your own Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals on WMNF. All right, we'll take any guesses you might have off the air after the show is in, because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Loria is up next with Radioactivity. Hope you'll join me next week with my longtime pitching partner, Laura Taylor, and I. We'll be raising money here for WMNF by way of speaking your support for Talking Animals and this gigantic goal. Please go to talkinganimals.net, look at all our cool thank you prizes and ways to donate. NPR News is next. Thanks, WMNF Tampa.